So my mum wrote this letter to her younger self, and it says, "Dear my younger self, I'm 37 years old now, and I live in Falkirk in Scotland. You would never think that that you would ever come here or end up living here. But here I am with my beautiful family, my lovely husband and my two gorgeous children. I am the luckiest person in the world. I couldn't give you an advice because I'm afraid that it would change your future, and I am extremely happy like this. The only advice I would give you, that you should learn English harder and move to Scotland as soon as possible. Good luck. Follow your heart."
When you sighed, your breath was mine. When you sighed, your breath was mine.
My granddad, he was in the Black Watch. I don't really know what he did. He doesn't really elaborate on that much. But my granny, she worked in the mills as a winder on the big machines. So, yeah, it's pretty cool. This is my granddad's rhubarb crumb cake. Preheat the oven to 350 degrees Fahrenheit for 35 to 40 minutes. For the topping, you'll need 2 3-quarter cups of sugar, 1 teaspoon of cinnamon, 1 tablespoon of butter. When we were at the Underwear Museum, I looked at the girdle, and the girdle packaging said it makes you 5 pounds thinner.
If my Grand Rosie were an item of underwear, she would be a corset because she has quite a big build, but she shrinks herself down as she's quite quiet. My Grand Mimi is tiny and very skinny, but she sort of builds herself up. She can be quite intimidating if she's annoyed or angry, so she would be a petticoat.
There was never a fashion invented that was more sexy. How great to come into a room and occupy 6 feet of space.
A black and teal corset with black and white dotted feathers, and it had little diamantes scattered around it. And it had a nice sheer ribbon to lace up back.
I liked the corsets because I thought they were kind of they were fancy, like the one with the had the teal kind of colour and the feathers. I liked that one because it was quite pretty, but I thought about how long and uncomfortable it would be to wear that all day, and also I found out about how there was a man's corset, and that some famous men, I think a king or something, was wearing a corset for a long time, and he had a really small waist. So I found it quite fascinating about how the underwear has changed through the stages. So my first my picture that I got taken, I had my first dress on, and it was I think it was satin or something, and it had overlay, and it was all taffeta, and I had little gloves, and I had little boots on as well, and I had a little bonnet as well, and I think that's what maybe today, because I'm a tomboy, so it's kind of I like to wear jeans and jumpers, as you can see. But I took a kind of hissy fit when my mum put it on. I would pull up my neck, and I'd chuck the gloves off, and I grabbed the bonnet, was yanking it away from my thing. And so when mum took the bonnet off, my hair was like an afro. It was so big. Also, my cheeks and my eyes were all puffy because I'd been crying. So the photographer just told my mum to take it off, and so I could wear my vest and my nappy. So that picture is up in my living room, of me in my vest, but you can't see my nappy, thank God.
There was a lovely quote on the wall saying, "Without proper foundations, there can be no fashion," by Christian Dior. And I really like that because I disagree, and I think clothes are just clothes, and it doesn't really matter what you wear, because if people judge you, it says more about them than it does about you.
The bras from 1970s, they were big and unusually shaped, they had points like bullets. As a child, your family is tight and small, just like the corsets, but as you grow older, it loosens like the underwear now. Your life is fashionable like the corsets, but not everyone gets to see. Only special people get to see your fashionable side.
My mum always talks about how when she was young, how things were different. She always used to hang out with her friends, and just thinking back how they didn't have technology and all that. And how I see how these underwears changed from the 1930s to like today's styles reminds me of how much the world actually changes in such a small period of time.
When you sighed, your breath was mine. When you sighed, your breath was mine.
You could leave your door unlocked and your things would still be there when you came back. You could be out for ages and like your parents wouldn't worry. You could go to the cinema and stay there all day for just a short amount. It was better then, but also it's good now because there's like lots more security.
Well, my gran always says that this generation is really lazy and hopeless because back when she was younger, she used to have a set routine that she'd do every day, which was she'd go to school, come home, get changed, have her dinner, then go back out and walk around with her friends. And this generation just doesn't go out. We sit in our rooms most of the time on our phones.
What advice would you give to your 14-year-old self? He said that he'd tell himself to grow up, listen more, pay more attention to what you're doing, learn an instrument, focus on higher education or a good apprenticeship.
Well, my granny feels like today there's too much pressure on kids for exams and tests, and we're more stressed out and uptight about the tiniest of things. Like, she knows that I'm a stress head and everything like that. My granny knows me like the back of her hand, and she feels that our generation is more manageable than hers, and everyone, all the kids are kind, but some of them can be quite mean and not very nice. But the majority of us, she feels, are very manageable and better than her generation. And she really likes my generation quite a lot because they help her quite a lot. And if my granny was that age when she was younger, she wouldn't have had that much help. So that's what my granny thinks of our generation.
I tried to teach my gran all about iPhones and laptops. She just recently got a tablet and she has a computer as well. And she thought that because the tablet was touchscreen, she thought the computer was touchscreen as well. So she would always phone me and my mum and ask why the computer wasn't working and stuff. But yeah, we'd always tell her use the mouse because it's wireless, and she would always lose the mouse.
I asked my mum because my grandmother is, she lives in Hungary, so what was life like when you were 14? She said that it was very different because they didn't have technology, and she was hanging out with her friends all the time. They were always outside, and they liked to go to disco every weekend. She met my dad one day when she went to a concert, and then she went to a party to tell her friends about it, and he asked her to dance, and then he asked her out, and then they just saw each other every day after that.
My gran didn't really go into much detail about it, but my granny and granddad met in a club somewhere, and this was when she was in her late 20s, and my granddad asked her to dance, and it just all spiraled from there. So it's quite lovely how they met, because just now that wouldn't happen. It's all over text and stuff like right now, and some people don't even find their true loves because they're on their phones. Like, they could walk straight past them in the street and never meet them. So the way that my gran and granddad met is amazing, and I like to think that's how I'll meet my true love.
Love is when someone loves you and would do anything and everything for you, and you feel the same way about them, and you have like an unbreakable connection.
And love to me is finding ultimate trust with someone, because trust isn't something you give away easily.
Love is an unbreakable connection between two people that had a spark when they met.
We always complain about being hungry when all she had to eat when she was younger was a bowl of soup for her dinner. And our gran always used to make soup for her.
She said something about bacon, like every time she walked downstairs, her grandma would always be baking, so she was like, smelled the bacon, that just reminded her of home.
I'm not sure what my mum's was, but my favourite recipe of my mum's was homemade patties. They were like mini burgers with mashed potato and veg.
Her gran's favourite recipe was her Bakewell tarts. And she really liked them because she has a big sweet tooth, so yeah.
What you need: 75 grams of butter, 150 grams of digestive biscuits, 3 limes, 3 medium eggs, 1 times 405 grams of condensed milk, and 50 grams of caster sugar.
Well, I'm allergic to tomatoes. It's a skin allergy, and if it touches my skin, it goes all red and blotchy, but I can still eat them, which surprises people.
I love food. I eat it most for comfort when I'm sad or either want to watch a good movie. I'm allergic to no food. I love it so much.
I'm allergic to nuts, so when I eat them, like, my throat swells up and I get rashes. I eat for comfort because it makes me happy, and then it, like, helps you calm down when, like, you're in a really bad mood or on your period.
When I'm angry, I might be hungry, so if I eat, then I get more happy.
I put comfort sometimes when I have anxiety, and then when I feel upset, sometimes I like to eat because it just sometimes makes me feel better.
My mum buys me and my sister cupcakes as a treat, and they're very tasty. Every time I smell bacon, it makes me feel sick, so my friends can't eat bacon around me anymore.
And I refuse to eat fish because when I was like 6 or something, I ate fish and I was sick because I got food poisoning from it because it wasn't cooked properly.
The smell of fish and like onions kind of makes me like gag a bit. A lot of like seafood restaurants, I can't even go into them because it's like I will physically be sick. One time when I was younger, my mum gave me, it was baby food, and it was like had fish in it, and I was sick for a couple of weeks, so yeah, not a good experience.
So the shepherd's lentil pie serves 4 to 6 people. There's 175 grams of brown lentils, 1 bay leaf, 1 onion peeled and finely chopped, 1 stick of celery, finely chopped, 1 garlic clove, crushed, 4 tablespoons of wine, optional, but any cheap wine, 400.
My recipe for happiness is one teaspoon of family, 2 teaspoons of friends, 1 tablespoon of smiles, 2 tablespoons of love, mix it, then add a sprinkle of unicorns and drink happily.
"You Too, She Lied" is the title. It was a typical day in Falkirk. Rain, puddles, people on phones, listening to music, walking the dog, typical. 2 young teens walking, talking, laughing. The wind was blowing and their hair was all over the place, fringes flying and falling as the wind came and went. It looked as if they were in a movie, holding hands, debating about bands, their typical day. He was almost perfect in her eyes. He helped her through tough times and cared. He was her best friend. She remembered about the time he picked her up and ran around laughing. When he put her down, he said to her, "I love you." "I love you too," she lied. She didn't love him. She was in love with him. The postcard says, "Dear Mum, Falkirk is lovely this time of year, especially since I met him. He's my best friend and I love the way his hair lies half over his face and his eyes. There is one thing I regret. I lied."
The sun was starting to set. Jack and Alex were sitting on the hill between Graham High and the Calendar House. They had been dating for a few years. Today was their 5th year anniversary, so they decided to go for a walk in the dark and look at the stars in the sunset. Are you cold, jackass? No, I'm okay. Alex snapped back coldly. They lay in silence until Jack interrupted the silence again. What's wrong? Nothing, just tired, she said. I love you, he said, and hugged Alex. I love you too, she lied. Dear Alex, I visited the places we went together and remembered everything we did. I couldn't stay in England any longer. I had to come home. I wish it didn't have to end like this. I hope you're happy. I love you forever and always. Jack. By the way, I know you won't read this or won't care about what I'm writing this anyway.
Another mother lost her child. Another plot gone at Grand Sable. Another funeral filled with sorry for your loss or my condolences. The sky is crying for the families. Another funeral, another day. They say the smallest coffins are the heaviest, and I couldn't agree more. To someone who has never experienced loss, it won't make sense, but to a mother who has lost a child who has lost a parent, it's the heavy heart and soul that you can't bear to let go. Some see letting go as forgetting, but you never forget the death. You never forget the raw, harsh pain you feel when a loved one is stolen from you. Dear Emerald, my little angel, I know you'll never read this, and I don't know why I keep writing. You're dead, and I need to accept the fact that my baby is dead. You're only 6 months old. I guess I do this to cope, but please have fun in your little castle in the sky. Lots of love, Mummy.
Just married, read the shattered windscreen. Mary clambered into the wedding car, trying to avoid getting mud on her beautiful white dress. She waited on her husband climbing into the car after her. Husband, it sounded so unfamiliar, but knowing that John was hers made her smile. The sun shone through the car window, making Mary momentarily blind. She beamed up at Callender House, where her wedding reception had taken place. There was a quick knock on the car window. Due to an unexpected problem in the bridesmaid car, they were having to put the bridesmaids in other cars. The chief bridesmaid, Ellen, clambered into the front and beamed back at Mary. Excited, she asked. Of course. I just wish John would hurry up so he can get going, Mary exclaimed. They both giggled. John finally got into the car. Hello, beautiful, he said, greeting Mary with a kiss. Hey, Ellen, he mumbled, looking more than a little uncomfortable. She tossed him a small smile for the rear view mirror. Ellen felt sick, really sick. It wasn't just motion sickness, it was something more, something deep-rooted. She glared at John and Mary through the rear-view mirror. They were both beaming, hands attached, like they thought the other would be stolen away if they let go. Ellen wanted to be happy for them, she really did, but she just couldn't. She hated how John looked at Mary like she was the world, the sun, the moon, and every star in the sky. She hated how he never looked at her like that, and most of all, she hated that he was married, and to Mary of all people. The other night she had tried to kiss him. John usually would pull her close and kiss her back, but this time he pushed her away and shouted about how this has to stop. After all, he was getting married in a few days. Had John ever cared about Ellen? Tears pricked her eyes, threatening to spill over and ruin her makeup at any given moment. She knew the answer and it hurt. She glanced back at John, who was smiling into Mary's hair. I love you, he whispered, and that's what pushed Ellen over the edge. In a teary-eyed blur, Ellen reached out and grabbed the steering wheel. I'm sorry, she whispered as the car swerved out of control. Mary screamed, and Ellen took one last glance at John before she was hit with a sharp pain and the world slowly slipped away. The police examined the crash scene, trying to figure out what had happened. Where were they going? A small young policewoman asked. Probably to the after-party of their wedding. Only the bride survived, but she's in bad condition. The crash broke both their legs and gave her serious head wounds. What makes you think they were headed to an after-party? The younger one asked. Just married, read the shattered windscreen. Dear Mum, I hope you're having fun in Australia. It's been 3 weeks now and I got out of hospital just 4 days ago. They're saying I might not walk again, but I don't care. I'm so miserable, nothing feels the same. My eyes hurt from crying so much. The police are finished investigating. They're saying it was an accident, but I know what I saw. They won't believe me because I've just been through a traumatic event and I'm not thinking straight. It doesn't matter though, they're both gone. I miss them more and more every day. This is what Ellen would have wanted, love from Mary.
A nice summer day, Julie was walking in Callender Park in Falkirk. She loved the nature and always wandered around looking for things that no one would realise. She liked the way the branches looked on the trees and tried to make out some shapes. It was a beautiful warm day and loads of people, couples and families were in the park. It was noisy, a little bit, but she liked it. It made her feel happy to see all the nice families running around laughing. As she was walking, looking around at all the tiny details, she didn't realise that someone was coming towards her, and she walked into the person. "Oh, I'm sorry," she said, and kneeled down to help him pick up the papers he dropped. "It's okay," said the boy, smiling at her. When they finished picking up the papers, they stood up and just stared at each other for a minute or two, when finally the boy said something. "Hello, I'm Peter. It's nice to meet you." "I'm Julie. Can I invite you for an ice cream?" said the boy. Julie said yes, and they walked to the kiosk. After a couple of hours, they were walking around in the park, and the boy asked her out. She said, "I love you," but she lied. "Dear Mum, my days in Scotland are very good. I'm glad I've moved. I really needed a change. One day I was walking in a beautiful park near my house, and I walked into a boy. His name is Peter, and he's very nice. We're very good friends. I hope your days are good too, and I can't wait to see you next month. Julie."
My story is called The Altar. Right. "You know you need a groom to get married," the vicar whispered. "This was meant to be the happiest day of my life, getting married at the bandstand. I know it's not classy, but it's the place we first met. I thought my vows would be my best moment, but it turned into my worst. I'm so sorry, everyone, but the wedding is cancelled. I ran away crying. I got in the car, the one I was meant to be going to on my honeymoon in. The jewellers, please," I asked the driver. I walked through the door. "What's your return policy on rings?" My postcard. "Dear Noah, really, on this day, you left me. Did you even love me? Is there another woman? I don't care why. There was no warning, no note. I loved you, Maria."